This is the Tan Talk Radio Network.
Patsy with a Z. Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing, and for everyone who wants to know the story behind the book, coming to you from glorious Clearwater, Florida, the perfect place for writers to write and readers to enjoy a good book. And I am so happy to welcome to Joy on Paper another Canadian. This has been like a really Canadian past few months. I've had so many Canadians, and I'm so happy to welcome back to Joy on Paper Hannah Mary McKinnon, and we are here today to talk about her latest and greatest new thriller, and it is called Never Coming Home. Hi, Hannah.
Hi, Patsy. How are you? It's so good to talk to you again.
Oh, it's wonderful. I always love to listen to your accent. It's such a joy for me.
Thank you. How have you been?
Oh, well, I'm fine. You know, it's funny. We've missed the Canadians down here, you know, in Clearwater. We usually had so many millions of Canadians coming. They're only now coming back. I noticed that I've started to see Canadian license plates again.
Oh, good. Good. Yes. We're back amongst you guys.
Yes. Because I think last time, I think you were like really deeply into containment there.
That's right. Last year and the year before, we were in waves. But things are looking a lot brighter now, so I'm cautiously optimistic.
That's good. And can you start traveling again?
Actually, I just got back on Saturday. I just got back from Switzerland. I went to see my dad for the first time in almost 3 years. So that was wonderful. I decided I'm going, and I went, and it was fine, and it was brilliant, and I loved it.
Oh, that's great. Oh, yeah, it's crazy that all of these years that we've sort of blended into nothingness,
yeah. And
now you can get back to it. And meanwhile, of course, you know, for a writer, it's not so bad to be locked up in the house.
But being productive, actually.
Yeah, exactly. And also, I think you... the darkness of the moment came through a little in this book. You have a diabolical mind.
Thank you.
You're so sweet and so adorable, and then you have this wickedly bad side of you.
Kind of Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde type stuff going on.
Exactly. Well, this is a funny book. It's a suspense, which I love, a thriller, and this is exactly the type of book that is really enjoyable at a time like this when you want to get away from the news, the worst things, and you get into a book like this, and the word that came to my mind when I was reading the book, when I started reading your main character, his plans go awry.
They sure do. I mean, Lucas was very close to my heart. So, and I'll tell you why. So, for listeners who are just hearing about the book, it's Never Coming Home is written from the antagonist's point of view. So, from the bad dude's point of view for the entirety of the book, and you know right from the beginning that he's up to no good. And no spoiler alert here, but he hired a hitman on the dark web to get rid of his exceedingly rich but equally annoying wife, and he's sitting there waiting to cash in a month after she's gone, and strange things start happening because somebody knows what he did, and so he goes from hunter to prey. And it was really fun being in the mind of the killer, I guess, all safely, because nobody gets hurt, of course. This is fiction after all. But Never Coming Home, speaking about the pandemic, this is my third release during COVID times, but this is the book that I wrote and edited exclusively during the pandemic. And I started writing it about a month after my mum passed in 2020. And she was in Switzerland, I was here, and I couldn't get over to see her because of the pandemic. And so I already had planned the story, but I think Lucas, you mentioned that the book is funny, and that was what I needed. I needed to go somewhere in my head, in my manuscript, where I could wreak havoc but be sarcastic and have stuff happen where no one gets hurt. And that is why, actually, this is probably one of my darkest books, but it's also the funniest, because I needed somewhere to go where I could have a laugh when everything else felt basically bleak and hopeless.
Yes, and I mean, I was surprised at how funny it was. Just, and I got a kick out of it, and yet the suspense and the, you know, the tension that you build into your writing, it's always so good, and it keeps, you know, one turning the pages. But I did appreciate the humor. And you know, and you start off here with Lucas, and I mean, from the get-go, you know, this is not a great dude, but wow. And when things go awry, and don't you love that word? Isn't that a cute little word?
Great word. Yes, I love it.
You know, it's such a, when you write it out and it's just four letters, isn't it amazing? Do you love words? Just the joy of looking at a word sometimes?
I do. One of my favorite words, and I have no idea why, is flip-flop. Because it's fun to say.
It is, and it. I, you know, sometimes I do. I do the same thing. I fall in love with a word, and I get such a kick out of it. And so, when I think it was like page three, and the word awry came, and you know, one doesn't use that word very often.
No, that's true.
Perhaps if one is in England, one might use it a little bit more.
But
one doesn't hear it here, and when you never see it in writing. And then when you actually put it down on paper and you see, it says such a tiny little word, but it says so much. And in this book,
it does.
Awry is awry.
A very awry, poor Lucas.
Wow. Yeah. I don't know. You know, it's, what do you tell people with a suspense book? Because the part of the fun is the reveal. You're going along and you're thinking, this is happening. What's going to happen next?
Yes, that's part of the plotting process in part. But then as I write, for this one, actually, I have to say Lucas was very well behaved. He was very generous, because this book was my smoothest to write. Never coming home. You will remember me, we chatted about last year, and that was really hard to write because it features a main character, a point of view character with amnesia. But actually, Never Coming Home, I don't know why, maybe, I don't know why, but it just was the smoothest experience writing a book. And so I loved plotting it out and having all of these twists and turns, and basically having this bad guy who has had his wife murdered, but have then things go terribly, terribly wrong for him. And I remember the last two chapters, I actually cackled out loud. I didn't laugh out loud. I cackled, which I hope is a good sign. And
I think so, because I think I did too.
Oh, good. Oh, good, good, good.
Well, you know, for people who get this book, I want to tell them that it is a great experience, because when I got it, it was, you know, we were still in the pandemic mode. We were still wearing masks, and I really needed to break away for a little while and get into another world. And I'm looking at it from Lucas's point of view. Sometimes I would say, yeah, that's a good idea. Yeah, let's get rid of her. That's, you know.
Oh dear! So you were Team Lucas then, were you?
Well, you know,
a little bit.
You know,
and that was the pleasure of writing a character like that, because you will remember me. There's a character in there that's also up to no good, and it was interesting to be in their head. Whereas with Lucas, and I'm glad I wasn't in their head in You Will Remember Me for the entire duration of the book, because it can be really exhausting to be in the bad person's head all the time. And that was another reason why I layered Lucas so much. I mean, he has a mutt of a dog who he cares for. He cares very deeply for his dad. He has this really fun sense of humor. And so I enjoyed disappearing into the book and writing his story and spending time with him. And I hope readers will too, because he's, you know, just disregard the fact that he had his wife killed. It wasn't personal. It just, she was annoying and he wanted her money.
Yes, really. I mean, after all.
Yeah, I mean, she was a bit spoiled and entitled. I mean...
Yes, I mean, what the heck. And you're right, he did, I loved the relationship with his dad. And I thought, that's a very redeeming quality.
Yes. And that was also, dare I say, a little bit tactical, so that people... I love books where you have villains that are really layered and that you can root for, despite knowing that you really shouldn't, but you almost can't help it because they're human. They're not these... I tried very hard with Lucas to make him not a cartoon character bad guy, but just a multi-layered person where somebody, the reader might think, you know, I know it's bad, but it's not completely unreasonable. I wouldn't do it myself, but I understand why. That's what I love about villains. I love to understand why they are the way they are, to build their backstory so that the... as I'm writing, so that the reader understands where is he coming from and why is he the way he is.
Well, that's the great thing about when you come out with a character, and it's nuanced. So it's not just, you know, flat. We have a lot of different ways to go with him. And I will say something: the narrator for this book is amazing.
Yes, Alex Wyndham. So Alex is a total star. He is the British gentleman. He's an actor by trade and narrator as well. He does lots and lots of different books. His range of voices, he'll do young, old, male, female, American, South African. I mean, he basically, I don't know if there's anything we could throw at him that he couldn't do or wouldn't try and then be able to do. And he narrated, I discovered Alex when we were looking for narrators for The Neighbours, and he was one of the choices that my publisher sent a little snippet of, and I thought, wow, I just absolutely loved his voice. So he's been my male narrator ever since, actually. He did the chapters for Nate in The Neighbours. He did the entirety of Her Secret Son, which is just incredible the way he narrates it. He was the man on the beach in You Will Remember Me, and now all of Never Coming Home, and he's got such a lovely, lovely tone of voice, I find. And he could read me the phone book and I wouldn't be bored, you know?
Well, exactly. And I think it's such an, particularly for this book, where you do have this, you know, where we have this relationship with Lucas, and he captures it. It's beautifully done, just mm-hmm. beautiful.
He's amazing, he really is. And anybody out there watched Yellow Jackets, which did extremely well as a TV series? I think they're filming season two now, or will be soon. He's in that, and he plays the American detective Kevin in the present timeline of the TV show Yellow Jackets. And he's just amazing, and he's a lovely, lovely person. He really is. He's tremendous.
Well, he certainly has enhanced the whole experience. So for people who, you know, I often take the audible book and I have the, you know, the written book, and I like to sort of follow along sometimes because I learn a lot about writing and about language when I do that.
Yeah.
I think that's a great thing to do. And so I can tell people they really should get this. And what I also enjoy very much is on your website, you have the questions for book clubs, which I think is something really great when an author does that.
Yes, they're helpful instead of having to, I mean, people come up with their own as well, but they're there to either supplement what you have or just if you want something quick to go and grab the questions. And I'd love people to know that I'm always very happy to join book clubs, have your discussion either before or after, and then I love popping in and saying hello, and people can contact me on hannahmarymckinnon.com. There's a a contact form and my email there if they would ever like me to join. I love doing that. It's really good fun.
Yes, I'm going to ask when our library starts meeting again. I mean, this has been insane. We had so many events planned over the past 2 years, and then we had to cancel repeatedly. I mean, it was crazy. Just when we thought they'd open and we'd be able to get together. But I'm going to suggest that they do this book. I think everybody would really enjoy it, and I know I would enjoy talking about it and seeing what other people think about this whole idea of liking a bad guy. What can we do?
Yes, rooting for the villain, even though you know you shouldn't.
I know. Well, you know, it's so much fun to talk to you. I think of you often, actually, because I know that, you know, you have this background where, you know, England and Switzerland and, of course, Canada, and you're well-read. And I am so involved lately with authors who, you know, started writing during the pandemic, and now they're getting to the point they've actually started writing. They have things on paper. They have words on paper. And I tell them that's joy right there alone. And then they want to know how to get better, how they can improve their writing. Mm-hmm. And so I tell them a couple of things. I believe that they should read poetry because poetry teaches you the economics of words.
Yes, very true.
You know, learning how to use words precisely. And then, of course, to be well-read because there's nothing like really having a solid background in good reading.
Yes, for me, that's really important. I mean, I look at reading. It serves two purposes for me. Reading it's for pleasure because I love to read, and I've always got my nose stuck in a book or Kindle or my whenever I go out walking, I take my audiobooks out for a walk. Not my books, but although also I do listen to them, but other people's books. So it's for entertainment, but it's also to see how other authors do stuff. And I don't mean to plagiarize or copy what they do in any way, but it's just, for example, I'll give you a very concrete example. David Nichols is one of my favorite authors. He writes for TV and screen as well, and his dialogue is just snappy and funny and brilliant. And I remember writing The Neighbors thinking, how does he do that? And picking up the book and reading through a few pages and examples of his dialogue and thinking, oh, I get it now. I think I get it. I'm going to try and implement what I've learned. So it serves two purposes, but I love to read. It's just, you can go anywhere with a book, and it's always safe within a book. You can't really ask for better than that.
Exactly. Now, I was wondering, I've been thinking lately a lot about the strong female characters in English literature. Mm-hmm. Which character do you most relate yourself to? Who do you think, if you thought of yourself as one of these characters, would you be Jane Eyre? Would you be Kathy? Would you be, who's Elizabeth Barrett? Who is most like you?
Oh my gosh. That is a really interesting question, and I'm not sure I can come up with an answer fast enough. Can I answer that one next time?
Okay. It's a good idea. You can think about it. I was trying to think. I mean, I could never be a Kathy. I never liked Kathy, but I could be a Jane.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's aspects of me that could be Jane Eyre. But I've been thinking about it. You know, who would I most think of myself as?
Yeah, I'm going to have to take some time to think about that one and really, because there's a lot to choose from.
There are. But it's lots of fun. And part of the fun, of course, is to read a lot of English literature and find perhaps the character that most resembles your own personality.
Yes, absolutely.
Of course, I think in the more modern context, perhaps I like Harriet Vane. give me Lord Peter Wimsey any day, and I will be Harriet Vane.
Nice choice.
Nice choice, isn't it? of British literature, of who do you like? I mean, are you a Dorothy Sayers fan?
I honestly tend to read the newer stuff, recent releases, say in the last 20 years or whatever. But there are two standouts for me. One is Lisa Jewell, who her first book published in 1999, and it was rom-commy, that vein. And then she shifted more to books about family and family dynamics and more family dramas, just beautiful books, dealt with mental health as well, certain characters. And now she's moved more into the domestic suspense arena, and I've absolutely loved her books and watching her career as she has got older and her life has changed. When she wrote the first one, she wasn't married, she didn't have kids, and then she did. And that obviously, I'm assuming, I should not assume, but I will, that maybe those events in her life shaped the way she wrote and what she wanted to write about. So she's always top of my list. And then David Nichols, whom I mentioned, he has five books out. It doesn't do a release every year, but every couple of years, because he's writing for movies and TV. And as soon as his books come out, I've pre-ordered, months and months in advance, because they're just so exquisite and beautiful and funny. One of his books is called Us, and it's about the disintegration of a marriage. And you wouldn't expect that to be funny, but it is. It's funny and bittersweet and touching, and it's not suspense. It's just a gorgeous story about a couple that think they want to split up, and he's just so brilliant, utterly, utterly brilliant.
Well, I think those are all great suggestions, and my listeners are always asking for suggestions, and I like to expand their horizon, get them out there reading more, getting off of their social media and actually reading, because if they start reading, we need more readers. We need people to get off this silly social media and actually get out there and start reading books, and I think they'll be happier. I don't see that. At the end of the day, if you read a book, it gives you something. It fills you. You can spend a week doing social media, and at the end, you have nothing. You're sort of irritated, I think, with half the world. really irritated.
Possible. Funnily enough, I have three boys. One is an avid, at three sons, they're not little anymore, but one is an avid reader. He's always been a bookworm, always. Then we have twins, and one of them reads a bit, not a huge amount, but he does read. And the other one just recently, he always read a little bit when they were forced in. When you're forced to read, generally you don't want to do it. But he discovered books recently, and he read Never Coming Home. And this was so lovely. He came to me and he said, "Are you gonna write a sequel? I need a sequel. Give me the sequel. What happens next? I need to know. This is the best book I've ever written." And it was so lovely. Not just because it's my book and he loved it so much. I mean, that's absolutely brilliant. But it's the fact that he enjoyed a book, any book, could have been any book, doesn't matter, to that point. And for me, when somebody says, "Oh, I don't enjoy reading," I always think, maybe it's because you haven't found the book that resonates with you yet. And there's a book out there for everyone.
Exactly. That's what I try to tell people. Just go out there and find books. And it happens. Sometimes it can be just one book that will change you in so many ways.
Yeah.
You'll start thinking differently. You'll start imagining yourself as a reader. And I think when that happens, that's a fantastic moment. That's when you find the real joy on paper.
Yes, absolutely. When you just fall in love with books. And honestly, I didn't read for a long time. This might surprise people, but probably when I was at the height of my career, my former career, my corporate career, and we had three kids in 16 months, and I was working full time, I didn't read much. I was lucky if I got through maybe a book every 2 months, and I missed it. I missed it a lot, but I just didn't read. I just didn't have, or I felt that I didn't have time. No, actually, I didn't have time. And now I do, and I see it as part of my job, and it's just terrific. I don't read as much as some. You know, some people get through a couple of hundred books a year. I don't do that. It's probably around 50, which is already not bad.
Not bad. I think. Well, I want everybody to get this book. The new book is called Never Coming Home by Hannah Mary McKinnon. I love that name. Hannah Mary. I love that. And it is a wonderful book. And I tell people your website so they know where to find you.
They'll find me at hannahmarymckinnon.com.
Okay. And they can go there. They can find out all of your information for book clubs. It's fascinating. And I hope that people will get back together and start having book clubs again and contact you, and you can join them on Zoom.
That would be great. I'd love that.
Okay. And I hope, as a Canadian, do you eventually get down here to Florida like you proper Canadian should?
Well, I'm not a snowbird yet, but I hope to do more traveling, not necessarily this year, but definitely next.
Okay. Well, I hope you get down here to Clearwater and you can come into the studio, because I think you're delightful, even though you do have this diabolically little mind there. I worry about you sometimes, but, and people might look sideways at you saying, you know, she's so nice, but she's got all these crazy. Yep. You're fantastic, Hannah. I think you're really great. And the book is wonderful. And I'm so happy that you were back on Joy on Paper.
So am I. It's been a pleasure, Patsy, as always. Same time next year?
Okay, absolutely. Every time. Okay?
Thank you.
Let's make it a habit. Okay.
That works for me.
Yeah, we can do that for the next 30 or 40 years, I think. Okay?
It's a deal.
Okay. Bye-bye now. Bye, Hannah.
Bye. Thank you.
Okay, Hannah's great. We're going to have a commercial, then I'm coming back, and I have another author.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Are you ready to eliminate your home energy bill? Well, get ready to harness the sun. Go EHS, Effective Solar Solutions, by Efficient Home Services. With no upfront costs, you can save money on your utility bill and even eliminate your electric bill altogether with EHS Solar. Call EHS, the number one solar installer nationwide. We know how to customize your home. EHS handles every project in-house with no subcontractors. Remember, no upfront costs, tax breaks, and the best company in the business, Efficient Home Services. Schedule an appointment today at 727-353-3757. Visit our website and download your free buyer's guide to going solar at www.goehs.com. Go solar, go savings, go EHS. Call 727-353-3757 today to talk to our experts.
Are you an author, an artist, an inventor? Then you need to protect your valuable intellectual property. You need Larson & Larson. We have the experience and knowledge to help you with all of your legal needs, from processing trademark, copyright, or patent applications, to negotiating licensing agreements and handling litigation. The attorneys at Larson & Larson in Largo, Florida can help protect you. Call us today for a no-cost consultation at 727-546-0660 or visit our website at LarsonPatentLaw.com.
Do you dread being called on to speak at meetings or family functions? Have you envied those who can sway an audience with well-chosen words? Do you know that people who speak well earn more money, earn more rewarding careers? Gain the confidence to master any speaking situation. Toastmasters will allow you to find your voice. Go to Toastmasters.org to locate the club nearest you.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
This is Patsy with a Z, and I am back with my next guest, and I am so happy to welcome to Joy on Paper, Suzanne Speranza, and the name of her new book is called Ice Out. Hi, Susan.
Hello.
How are you?
Oh, I'm doing fine. It's a beautiful day in Vermont, so everything's good.
Okay, well, finally you got some good weather up there, huh?
Yes, finally.
It was a long winter, I think.
Yes, and then went right to summer for a week, but now we're back to spring.
Okay, that's what you need. Well, up in Vermont, if the daffodils are out and the tulips are out, it's a beautiful place.
Yes, always.
Always. Okay, well, what a book. I'm telling you, this is, I got this book and I was like, whoa. Did you have some fun writing this book?
Well, I was very engaged in writing it. It's a dramatic.
Yeah, it's like.
So I wouldn't say it was fun.
It wasn't. When I say fun, I mean it's like, you know, sometimes when you have a big idea and it's a complex idea, and also in so many ways it's horrific, but you have to get some actual fun in the process of coming out with it. I mean, it's really, you put a lot of thought into it, a lot of planning into this book. Tell us about it, because it's an unusual book.
I began with an idea. I think a lot of people or a lot of writers begin with characters. I began with an idea that I wanted to explore, and that idea is forgiveness. Are there some things, some acts that are so egregious that you can't forgive? And what if you're in a situation, as many people are, their lives go along very nicely, and then something comes out of the blue, and it changes it, and then they have to deal with it. So these are some of the ideas I wanted to explore. In terms of having fun writing this book, I actually, as a writer, I could step back, and I would be very glad when I accomplished what I wanted to accomplish in a scene or, you know, part of the text that I was writing.
Because as I was reading it, and it is, it's very, there's a lot of darkness, there's a lot of just sort of foreboding and sadness and all of that. But I was thinking that the process of it, the actually being able to work it in the way that you did, deciding, first of all, what point of view you were going to take and whose point of view you were going to take, and the entire process of coming out with revealing the story, because the story is told a great deal in flashbacks, which is also, for an author, a big challenge.
Yes. When I first started writing this, I didn't have the flashbacks. And I found myself getting bored writing it and then, you know, rereading it. So I said to myself, this is not going to work. I needed to build some dramatic tension. So I used the going back and forth in time to add that tension, and I think it did.
Well, tell us about Francesca. So we start off here with the story, the basic story of Francesca and her husband, Ben. How do you like to tell people about the story? Because it's always, you know, it's always difficult to know how much to reveal. But, I mean, we have the basic format of what's going to happen right at the beginning.
Yes. Francesca has a near-perfect life. Everything she wants, she has. She has a beautiful house in the country, a wonderful husband, a beautiful 4-year-old daughter. She has the job she wants. She's a professional flutist and a music teacher. And then an accident happens, a snowmobiling accident, and it traps three of them in a frozen lake. And her husband, Ben, gets out and leaves them behind to fend for themselves or pretty much die. And that's the ultimate crisis.
I mean, like, yeah. I mean, that's a start of the book. I mean, like, okay, that's this isn't going to be good.
Well, the story begins with just after the accident, when she finds herself in this situation. He just gets out. And then it goes back and forth through time, revealing her life, and then later on his life. Because when I constructed the character of Ben, I had to make him weak rather than evil, because I think you can kind of come to terms with weakness, but I think it's very hard to forgive evil, true evil. So I had to give him a lot of background and you know, add to the psychology of why he would do something like this.
Yeah, because...
Yeah, within his relationship with his sister and what happened there, I think explains that to an extent.
Now, I enjoyed the element of her being a flutist or flautist, as we'd say in England. Do you play the flute?
I did when I was younger.
Yeah? Well, I like that element of it because I played the flute, and I particularly enjoyed, I love the scene. Your writing is really terrific, and you are able to do what I tell all authors to do, paint a picture. Take me into a scene and make me feel it. the one on the ice I didn't really want to feel, but I did. But I loved also the scene with the children and how they you know, flocked around her as a teacher, and how much she enjoyed playing the flute for them. I thought that was a very touching and very revealing scene, because I remember when I lived overseas, I actually lived in Iran, and I had my flute with me, and I would play it. And the children would just flock around me. And it was absolutely exactly like the way you write it. The way their faces would look when you play an instrument like that. A flute is so, it looks so insignificant until this magic comes out of it.
Yes, and I think that's the power of music. You know, I think that's the power of music for anyone's life. I mean, music is very important in my life. I don't play the flute anymore, but I'm always listening to classical music, and my weakness is opera. So I guess that's where I get the dramatic element of my story. but music is very important, and I think it does have the power to change people and to impress people. To the extent where you can take a bunch of incorrigible 8-year-olds and make them just sit quietly and listen.
Well, I enjoyed that element of it. So sort of my mind kept, as I'm actually during some of the scenes, I sort of heard flute music in my head, or actually perhaps I actually turned it on. So, because it does add a sort of eerie element, I think, to the story.
Yes. You know, again, I don't want to reveal too much, but, you know, when she's in the forest, things are not what they seem to be. So, yes, her music is there, but not as it should be.
Yeah. Well, yeah. There was, you know, when you're writing a book like this with, as you said, the important thing here was that somehow you had to create this situation with Ben that we could understand.
Yes. And I think, well, I've had different reactions to him. I mean, some of the readers want to kill him. you know, I mean, and it's not really about him. It's about her reaction to what happened. I know he plays a part in this, and he does this egregious thing, but in the end, it's her having to come to terms with the fact that her life has changed and she has to go on. And in fact, that's part of when I say, I think on the back of the book, it says it's like, you know, there's an allegorical element. And it's true because the story can be taken at face value, but the last half of the book could also be looked at as an allegory for people who go through any kind of loss and want to figure out how to go on. I mean, I'm sure we've all had loss. Okay, not necessarily of a person or a relationship, any kind of loss, like when you get fired from your job or, you know, or you know, your finances are such that you have to suddenly sell the home you know, your kids grew up in and you don't really want to do it. I think what it is it people go through the same stages. They get angry. They're bitter. Like, why is this happening to me? I'm not going to accept it. And then eventually you realize, and a lot of times people have described, like, you know, especially the loss of a relationship or some profound loss, that they feel like they're lost in the dark forest. They just can't find their way out. And that's what happens to her. But at some point, in order to go on, she has to accept what's happened and forgive and go on. And that's the allegory.
And there's this, I know that it's under the sort of metaphysical aspect that they also write about. But, you know, the story, I think you've done it brilliantly. As I said, you're just a really excellent writer. And I so enjoy, there are really quite a number of scenes there that I just stopped and I reread them a couple times because I thought, well, this is really fine writing when you can take a reader to a place and make them feel that they're there.
Well, that's what I try and do, and I'm glad to hear that I accomplished that. I think that's what every writer should do. Certainly, that's what I try and do.
Well, I think you've accomplished it very, very, very well with this book. What are your, you know, when you are looking for a comparison to another author, who do you think you compare to?
Well, that's the hard part. you know, I mean, I have writers who have influenced me, like Kafka. you know, anybody who really does any kind of rely on symbolism and allegory. Ishiguro, I just read his Clara and the Sun, and I see elements of that. But, you know, I mean, I've been told that people are looking at this as a very unique work. I wasn't aware that it was that unique, but apparently to many readers it is.
Oh, it is. I think it's very unique and in a great way, because it, you know, we always need sort of an expansion on our universe. And you have so many deep ideas in here and thoughts and insights into human nature. And I think that's why it's such an enjoyable read. Even though it's, you know, there are these dark elements, I still found, I think the process of what you went through, of thinking things through and how people would react, and what you would, anybody would feel if they were abandoned in this way, I think, you know, you've done a brilliant job with it.
Well, I tell everyone that my writings, all my writings, represent my experience of having lived in the world. And I don't write. I think some people would have preferred a Hollywood ending. Okay, and I don't write Hollywood endings because that's not my experience of having lived in the world. I think every writer has a reason why they write, and mine is not to, you know, I guess. Well, I won't say give hope, but I mean, I don't want to sound too down. But I mean, I guess I put out, like, my experience of having lived in the world, and people will either identify with it or they will not identify with it.
And now, of course, the book has won many awards. Yeah, you're like raking them in. You've got the Literary Titan Award, right?
Yes.
Eric Hoffer Award, a finalist, and the Book Excellence Award for 2022 Winner of Fiction. Wow. So you're racking it up there.
Yes, and that was before it was even published.
That's what I was going to say. I mean, that's... Here it comes out today on Pub Day, and you've already got all these awards. That's pretty terrific.
Yes, I'm very happy about that. I'm happy that it's finding my reader. And that's, I think, a goal of, at least my goal, it should be of every writer. Because not everyone, I mean, there are a million people out there in the world, and not everyone's going to, and a million books. And not everyone's going to like the same book. All right? But my goal is to find my reader.
Well, I think you've done it, and I think winning all of these awards is very impressive. And the book, you know, it covers all of this, redemption and forgiveness and all this sort of psychological plotting that you've done carries the reader along. And I'm very, very happy that you were able to join me today, because I love to bring new and interesting books to my listeners. I, you know, it's fine to just read the same style or the same genre all the time, but I do like to tell my readers, my listeners, become wider readers, and I think they will enjoy this book. And as I said, it's called Ice Out, which is a nice title, and it's by Susan Speranza. Did I pronounce that right? Speranza?
Mm-hmm.
Is it Speranza?
Yes.
Okay, Speranza. Susan Speranza. The name of the book is Ice Out. It has a nice, eerie cover. And do you have a website you want people to go to?
Yes, it's SusanSperanza.com.
And they can see right there. They can see all your awards right at the Why? My goodness, that's exciting. I think, and that you also have a little trailer there to give people a hint of what the book is about. But I do want to thank you so much for being on Joy on Paper today, Susan. Good luck with the book, and I think you're going to have a lot more awards before you finished.
Well, thank you. Thank you for having me.
Okay. It's been a joy to talk to you. Bye-bye now.
Bye.
Bye. Oh, right. This is an interesting book. I will tell you that. It's different, and I was very, very taken with it when at first I wasn't sure, and then I started reading it, and I think you will enjoy it. And certainly one of the things about it, well, I'm always interested in the books that win a lot of prizes and sort of trying to think in the heads of the people who make these awards, because I gave some awards out this year for the Patsy Awards, and I'm trying to think about what I look for in a book. And one of the things I look for is a book that has some depth and that really, I think, will help people to come to terms sometimes with events in their own lives. And I think Susan's done a great job with this book. It's called Ice Out, Susan Speranza. A very interesting book. And of course, back, I just want to mention again, Hannah Mary McKinnon. I love her writing. And, you know, it's just always so fun. She's been on Pub Day. I think this was her fifth book that she's been on, Joy on Paper. And so every time she has a pub date, and I think she always has it like this last week of May, and it's fun to be able to watch how an author develops, just as I've been watching since I started the program over seven years ago. I've watched every step of the way as Carol J. Perry started off with book one of her Witch City Mysteries, and all along the way we've gone through, we're up to 12 books. Her most recent book is Till Death. And we had finally the wedding of her main character, Lee Barrett. And I remember when we first got the first time I read the first book, and I gave it to my sister, Natalie, who is considered in our area the connoisseur of cozy mysteries, and she immediately loved Lee Barrett, and Lee Barrett has an aunt called Aunt Ibby, and both of those characters we immediately fell in love with, and right from book one, Natalie kept saying, okay, now we have to get her married. And so we went through 12 books. It took 12 books in 7 years. Not bad. And now Carol's just gotten some more contracts to do some more books. And so now that we got her married until death, so I always love a book when there's a wedding. And that book came out on April 26th. You can get that. And go back and start at the beginning, read all 12 of them, because next year she's going to be here with book 13. And we're hoping... My sister's hoping for that baby, because we really fell in love with Lee Barrett, and we want we want actually twins. So we're hoping Carol's listening, and we're sending her a message. Lee Barrett needs to have some babies, and that's what we're talking about here at in my house whenever we get a Carol J. Perry book. And, of course, and now she also has a second series. Isn't that wonderful? That's the great thing about being a writer. You have one idea, and then you have another idea, and you run with it. And so Carol did that with her new series that's set right here in Florida. So I'm really happy about that. And that's called Haunted Haven. And we're going to have Rita Moreau is going to come in a 2 weeks. She's going to come back here to the studio, and she is going to do some more book buzzes, because we need to catch up on book buzzes for all of the wonderful cozy mysteries that we have had on the program recently. And Rita has a new series, and it is the Ghost and Kooky Ghost and Camper Kooky Mystery Series. Sorry about that, Rita. Ghost and Camper Cookie Mystery Series, and she has an Audible book that's coming out, and we will be announcing that. And also she's working on the fourth book. She's on her fourth book. This is the wonderful thing about being a writer. There are so many things, so many ideas, and it keeps you going, keeps you busy. And remember, I hope that all of you will remember what I always tell you, that one of the joys of life is to see your words on paper, or to hear them spoken in an audible book, or if you're very, very lucky, to hear those magic words, lights, camera, action, and your book will be turned into a major motion picture, streaming video, or perhaps a series on the Hallmark Channel, and you never know unless you start writing. So everybody, start writing, get out there, and you will be a guest here on Joy on Paper next year. You know, that's all it takes. It takes a year of hard work. And meanwhile, say something nice to somebody, and I will say something nice to Big Ed in the control room. Thank you, Ed, for everything. And he saluted me, and I saluted him, because I really should have been a general. And then I would have a wonderful general's pension. Oh, wouldn't that be nice? Anyway, everybody, take care. Have a wonderful day. Bye-bye now.
WTAN, Clearwater.
FM 106.1.
WDCF, Dade City.
FM 102.3.
WZHR, Zephyr Hills.
FM 104.3.
Listen.
This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by Rocket Mortgage.
I'm Steve Kathan. Up early to vote today in Georgia.
Scheduling. I'll get in here earlier.
The only reason we didn't do early voting is because my husband's in the hospital for a while. And so once he got out over the weekend, we was like, we got to be here on Tuesday.
In the closely watched Republican battle for governor, it's in